So you want to impress me? Show me how you're leading a group that exhibits love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control, you know, and on from there. And so it, but you can't, like, that's not in your 401k. Nobody's going to put your name in the newspaper for it. They're, like, your mom can't brag about it to her friends at her prayer group. You know, but it's not because it's the wrong category. It's just that the, I mean, we know this biblically speaking, that Jesus just doesn't care about some of the categories that we lose sleep over. It's a question of what does it mean to be successful, and who cares, is really what it comes down to.
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And with us, we have shortly joining us will be Nathan Rittenhouse. Nathan is one of the founders of Thinking Out Loud Together Ministries. They have a really fantastic podcast that I definitely recommend you check out. We have some long experience with Nathan, which we'll talk about here shortly. And in this conversation, we're really trying to, and we end up chasing this around a little bit. And as Nathan said at the end, I'm not sure if we answered the question, but we certainly put some more questions on the table. But what it's like to experience the practical realities of Christian living. What does it mean in a day-to-day basis? Not in terms of like the large goals, not even the big apologetic faith ideas, theology ideas, but what that happens when it transfers down to the what this looks like on a minute-by-minute, day-to-day basis, how you measure your life and the success of your life. And we may not have had any answers, but it was a fun and interesting conversation, and we hope you enjoyed as we share it with you. Well, this is super fun. This is a situation where I'd probably have this conversation with Nathan and David anyhow, but we just get to have it and record it, and you get to listen to it, and you can decide 30 minutes from now whether that was a good deal for you or not, gentle listener. But it is an absolute pleasure and just so much fun to have Nathan Rittenhouse back on the Be Unbound podcast. Welcome, Nathan.
Hey, thanks so much. Good to see you guys.
So Nathan and I have a long history together. Nathan has a long history with Unbound. I think we might be able to claim that Unbound has a long history with Thinking Out Loud as well, which is Nathan's ministry that he does. And so in that, we've had time for a lot of interesting conversations. We've got a lot of shared history and background together. And one of the things that I appreciate deeply about Nathan is that he's somebody that can do two things that I think are somewhat rare. He has a very rich and deep, precise, academic, scholastic understanding of life in general. And that is certainly on the theological side, but you can go pretty deep with Nathan talking about physics and hard science and all that kind of stuff. And that's fascinating and interesting and not necessarily common, but what's even more uncommon is that is combined with a pretty exceptional practical application and understanding. In fact, while I've talked to Nathan about theological stuff a lot, it might be more common to have been splitting wood with him or hauling a bunch of bees in the back of his van or doing something, you know, or having him come over and fix my washer and dryer or building a kayak together. And so I think we have actually a little more history doing those kinds of things. And so there's a real combination of somebody who deeply understands the ideas inherent in Christianity and the faith, but maybe even more so has some pretty deep experience in living that out in a very practical way. That's interesting for us here at the Be Unbound podcast because we often talk about this being a podcast for practical Christian living. So with that frame up, Nathan, I just want to give you a little free rein to talk about, from your perspective, once you've kind of, you know, absorbed the ideas and you've said, yes, this makes sense, and you're living in light of that truth, what difference does that make on sort of a day-to-day basis? Not in like a grand scheme of like, this is my ministry or this is my vocation, but more in that kind of like, get up every morning, we got to get breakfast and the kids off to school and what's going next type of situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, so as you were saying that, I had a memory that might explain a little bit of why and how I am. When I was 8 years old, my parents bought a metal red toolbox for me for my 8th birthday. And then for every birthday and Christmas, from 8 years old till the time I left home, my parents and my grandparents each bought me a book and a tool. So I ended up with a nice stack of books to take with me and enough tools to be able to dismantle a car when I left for college. You know, so there was, you know, reflecting back on those two sides of it, of the kind of the metaphysical, the theoretical, the intellectual, academic, the bookish side of it, but also you need to know how these wrenches work. But it's not just having the tools, it's having the posture to think that you know how to use them and where to apply them. And so I think this is where it gets interesting from a Christian perspective when we think about the fact that if we live with the idea that all ideas are and words are meant to be physically manifest in the world, and that there isn't a neat, tidy, spiritual, physical duality. But the incarnation was real. Spirit does precede matter, for sure. As Christians, we believe that. However, matter is real and matters. And so there's this, any time that we start to drive a wedge between the metaphysical academic side, and I think if you go down this direction, it just gets dry and dusty in your mouth so fast, where you're like, what does this have to do with, you know, and you see this even in the apologetic side of thing of, you know, theoretical questions about suffering are one thing, but stillborn children are another. And so there's just this, the little rabbit trail here, but you listen to like the Alex O'Connors of the world and some of the more, I think, well-spoken, and I appreciate the way that they're thinking, critics of Christianity, and there's a thoughtfulness to it. But on the other hand, so much of what I'm seeing now as I listen to the conversations, like, yeah, but that's not the context in which the gospel is tested. Like Jesus was out in the middle of nowhere touching and healing people. And so I kind of live with this sense of, to me, it feels like driving in a city and you see this really nice jacked up Jeep that's all polished up with the, you know, the Super Swampers on it and the lift kit, and it's all tricked out. And you're like, okay, that's neat, but how does it work in the mud?
Yeah, when was the last time you took that thing off the pavement?
Exactly. And so I think we don't want to, as churches, individuals, congregations, families, ever want to drift into a form of Christianity that looks nice on the street but can't handle the mud. Because Christianity definitely was built for the mud and the reality of the world in that way. So part of it is, I think it's the tooling, it's the community that we have around us, but then it's also thinking about the theological importance, but then the physical practicality of, do I know enough to begin to be helpful in this situation? And am I willing to start something even when I can't see how it'll end? Those have been helpful things for me to say, I can contribute here a little bit. And maybe there are so many things in life that you can't see the end of it where you're at right now. You have to take a couple steps in that direction before you can see over the hilltop. And so a lot of the applied, I mean, and actually this is all through the teachings of Jesus, of if you obey me, then the Father will, and I will come. You know, there's that sense of like, my grandpa likes to say, it's easier to change lanes once you start moving. And so I think having a spiritual posture of, Lord, I'm willing to move today. I'm willing to, you know, help me get going here. And then what do you want me to see as we go along here? That all plays into, it's not really a to-do list. It's more of a cultivated posture of curiosity and optimism and hopefulness as a general orientation toward difficult situations we see in the world.
It makes me think when you mentioned how Jesus taught and how he went about his ministry, the fact that a lot of the time, like, yes, he would go into the temples and have debates with the religious leaders of the day, but a lot of these stories that are most impactful to us when we hear about them are the stories of him interacting with everyday people in their everyday lives, and just people who are going to wells or are just at the side of the street, and just interactions with very normal people in normal circumstances. You know, Jesus didn't go about his ministry exclusively by just trying to win over the elites of his society and trying to just prove the ideals of what his teaching was. Mm-hmm. He went out and he manifested it through proving its relevance to the everyman, to people just like us. And so it just really kind of covers me to really think on that truth of, we have a savior who wanted to show how his teaching was relevant to us. And whenever he would perform a healing or something like that, a lot of the time there was a very practical action step afterwards. Mm-hmm. Whenever he would perform something or show something miraculous, he didn't just sit sit there and, you know, grandstand, as we might expect a lot of the religious figureheads that we know of today might do. He said, like, okay, get up and walk. And a lot of the time he said, don't tell others about what I did here, and just live in accordance to the difference that I made in your life. And I think that is a really powerful point we can take to heart. Traditional education doesn't work for everyone. If you or your student wants something different, check out Ascend by Unbound. With flexible courses, real-world projects, mentorship, and community, Ascend equips young adults to thrive academically, professionally, and personally. Students consistently say that the close-knit support and resume-ready experience are their favorite parts. Enrollment prices rise soon, so don't wait. Find your track at beunbound.us/ascend.
So, Nathan, one of the things that I think about is that I came from a high school background and some college work, which was very blue collar in many ways, farming and construction types, things like that. And then post college, I've worked in more white collar type trades. And, you know, you see some immediate deficits in those. When I worked in blue collar jobs, the people I worked with had a level of pride often in their work, but it was buried under a burden of labor, I guess, for mm-hmm. for lack of a better term. I mean, there was this kind of like, I'm doing this, and at some level, I've got a deep pride because I can do it. But at a surface level, at least, or the level I talk about, this is to be complained about because I'm down here in the muck and the dirt and the hardness, and my knuckles are bleeding, and I'm just tired, and it feels like labor, and it feels like I'm forcing and fighting to do this, right? Mm-hmm. Then you switch over to white collar, and it's like, you know, they're not physically struggling, but there's a pervasive sense of hopelessness. Like, you know, I'm understanding that I'm blessed because I'm not out in the cold, or I'm not, you know, knee deep in mud or slop or something like that. But there's just this feeling of just futility in terms of what I do. Does it even really matter? And I see both of those as real tragedies. And so I contrast this, and I know you're not going to be super comfortable with this, me using you personally in this. I've seen you alive and on stage, obviously engaged in what you're doing and doing a phenomenal job and interacting with an audience. That's very white collar. I've seen you author things that have really deep meaning to them, things like that. And I think you get really excited about that, or reading a book and translating the ideas in it. But I then don't see much of a difference watching you go crazy with a chainsaw or swing a hammer or pull my washing machine apart in the laundry room and try to put it all back together. Like, in other words, there is the same satisfaction, attitude, and joyful curiosity, you mentioned that earlier, through all of those things. I think that's a bit unusual, which is tragic, because I think that's a representation of what is the potential and possible, maybe probable outcome of living constantly in the presence of the truth that we confess. Mm-hmm. But somehow you're unusual. so that's an interesting observation, but yet I look at that and say, yeah, that's kind of what we're going towards. And I don't know that I would contrast it the same way, but I've had the same kind of joy. Like, you know, I'm running a chainsaw cutting a tree. I'm pretty excited. And I'm also pretty excited doing the white collar stuff that I do. So I don't know if you want to think through that a little bit with me, but there's a contrast there that's noticeable.
Yeah, we should probably get my wife's opinion in on this. I like to say that I try not to bite off more than Aaron can chew. So this, you know, I kind of collect hobbies as a hobby, and I always tell people I try to keep her somewhere right in between being impressed and rolling her eyes. So, you know, you have the perspective from a distance here, but we probably should get an expert at some point in on this. One of the things that maybe so there definitely is a spiritual component to it, but as we're talking about the spiritual manifesting itself in physical things, is that I'm also very embedded in a community, and that makes it I have a much bigger safety net than the vast majority of people that I've run into outside of the Christian world. And so you're willing to try tight ropes and lots of dumb stuff when you know there's a big crash pad underneath you, or climbing up something that you might fall off of. And I'm not talking about economic stability here necessarily, but I'm like hundreds of relationships away from being homeless. I'm like, and so when you start like, or of going hungry, or like, I bet I know 20 people that in the next 5 hours, if I needed $1,000 would just give it to me if I asked for it, because of the way that I've lived embedded with them in their lives. And there's a level of trust there. And so, and I bet a lot of other Christians have that same sort of, and so there's a little bit of like, I can dare to overextend slightly. Now your mechanic does not think it's funny when you roll, like when you push your car in and be like, "Hey, I took this apart. Can you help me figure out how to put it back together?" So you can get yourself in over your head, but there is a little bit of a heft and a momentum and a security to the physical community that forms around the spiritual reality of the gospel that provides a platform and a rigidity to it, not as like building a wall, but a ballast and an anchor and a launch pad, so to speak, that I think a lot of other people are missing. Because so you could look at it from the white collar perspective of like, what if AI replaces my job what's going to happen, you know, next month. Will I be able to pay my bills? Yeah, you will. Yeah. Or the other side. And the other thing too, Jonathan, is like, back to the blue collar thing. Like, a lot of the blue collar work complaint is just a language of solidarity. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, all the farmers get together and complain about the weather. And you're not really complaining. It's February. Everybody knew this was coming. It's happened every year of your life. But it's like it's a fun way for us to express, like, yeah, we're all in this together. We're all doing it. And at the same time, probably some of the best philosophers I know are farmers or blue collar workers when it comes to like actual pragmatic wisdom of like how the world really works. I keep coming back to that old, Peter Kraft thing. So he teaches theology, I believe, still at Boston College, where he said, we used to live in a world, he said, you know, like, you can have a phenomenal academic career and have ideas that have no correlation or connection to reality at all. Like, it can be total ivory tower. You get all the honors, the tenure, the whole thing, write the books, and it doesn't make any material sense, but it's fine. He's like, you can't do that and be a successful farmer. And he said, at one point, we lived in a country where we had 10 times more farmers than we did PhDs. And now we have 10 times more PhDs than we do farmers. And there's your description of the world in which we live. And so it's a challenge for me to separate those categories. Cause actually the way that we work out white collar, blue collar does have to do with economics and then physical manifestation of ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm in a little bit of a phase of life where I'm trying to intentionally blur those lines and reclaim, you know, one of my brothers said to me recently, you know, it's fun to listen to Dave Ramsey every once in a while, or a financial guru kind of thing. But at the end of the day, you can quickly drift into a vision of your Christian faith that is all about dollar signs. And I'm not saying anything against fiscal responsibility at all, but the tendency right now is for economic considerations to eat up 89% of the mental pie. And I think as a Christian to gently say, okay, economics is really important, but in this sliver of my life, and there's so much more that I want to be involved in that doesn't make any economic sense as well. Going to visit your neighbor, you don't make any money from that. And I mean, we could just make a phenomenal list here of stuff that really brings meaning to life that is not measurable. And I think that's the challenge of how do other people measure what it is that we're doing, or how do we measure things and count it as success? When you go, like, I know you like this, Jonathan, you know, sometimes you spend a whole day talking to people, emails, whatever, and you're like, I've got nothing to show for this day. And then you go and mow the grass and you're like, oh, that was great. You know, like, I can see what happened here as it works out. So I didn't really answer the question. I just added more to it.
Well, I think that measurement part is really interesting. And that brings up something that, you know, it's worth every once in a while. I think it's helpful to sort of step back and go, do you realize what we just did here? Like, are we thinking, have we examined the ideas here? I've been, you know, kind of talking about this recently that, you know, one thing that we can definitely claim as distinctive human is that for humans, an idea always precedes action. What I'm curious about is that often a subconscious idea precedes action. You know, there is some sort of idea behind what everything. So lots of people, I think, are sleepwalking. They're going through life and they're acting in such a way that they're acting on an idea that may be invisible to them. They're not really paying attention to that. And here's one of them. For years, from when Nathan and I worked together at college until, you know, through Unbound, you know, I've stood in front of audience and said, you know, what are you doing next? Some version of that. And if you answer that, if you ask that question without any other framing, the answer will 99.99% of the time be economic. Mm-hmm. It'll have something to do with a job or career and things of that nature. But in my life, I had a very strong internal resistance to answering that question with an economic answer. I felt like I had to answer it that way, but I didn't care about it. At some level, for a lot of my life, I didn't care what my job was, but I cared a lot what my family looked like. And I know, Nathan, you've had some experience with, you know, making a decision based on community, not based on economics. And so I think that that's interesting. I don't know when, you know, if there's a point in history where that changes. Is that a default human response? Is that a product of our culture? But I think somewhere in there is there's a lot of people acting on the influence of an invisible idea, and they haven't really pulled it out and looked at it. When they do, you might be surprised where that leads you. Does that make sense?
So, yeah, let me jump at it this way, and this will sound like it doesn't connect, and let me loop it back around. So we talk about the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience. I don't know how you memorize it. Sing a song. I don't know what your flannel graph, old school. Depends on how old you are. So the fruit of the Spirit, and I recognize that we often think of those as individual characteristics, which they are supposed to be. They're supposed to be manifest in our lives. But I started realizing the people that I really admire and respect are the people that foster that fruit collectively in a group and in a community. So you want to impress me? Show me how you're leading a group that exhibits love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control, and on from there. And so but you can't, that's not in your 401k. Nobody's going to put your name in the newspaper for it. They're like, your mom can't brag about it to her friends at her prayer group. It doesn't have the handles on it. But it's not because it's the wrong category. It's just that we know this biblically speaking, that Jesus just doesn't care about some of the categories that we lose sleep over. And so that would be one example of, what is a measurable result of... It's a question of what does it mean to be successful, and who cares, is really what it comes down to. And there are, there are a couple, categories of this that drive me kind of crazy, but there's one big one that's still alive of, well, this person really, that was really stupid. They left a good job, and they moved away from their community, and they did this, but, and that wasn't as stepping wrong, but they really loved that girl, so... So maybe a relationship would be a reason, would be one of the remaining categories where we would see somebody do something that isn't considered fiscally responsible, but it's, and oftentimes, anyway, we won't evaluate everybody's relationships here, but there are a couple little glimmers where we still give people a pass and say they did that thing, even though it didn't make economic sense because it seemed like the right thing to do. And so I want to make sure that the church maintains a healthy dose of that, and that I do personally, of saying, hey, let's celebrate the people who succeed in these categories, and they're worthy of celebration and praise, but also let's not put our hope in those categories as the defining metrics of faithfulness in our life. I mean, it's not well done, good and rich servant, well done, good and clever servant, well done, good and, start putting some other adjectives in there, and your adverbs, and you pretty quick adjectives, yeah. And you can pretty quickly see how, faithfulness doesn't have our modern metrics attached to it.
It seems like just most of our modern tangible metrics just don't actually have practical kingdom building significance that Scripture talks about most of the time.
So, yeah, I was thinking about that same thing, David. And so let me push that on a little bit. And Nathan, what do you think about this? So we're clearly... we clearly respond to measurable things. That's why sports are interesting, right? You can, as sports breaks it down, you can tell right away that team's better than that team. And there's something inside of us.
I do this in spades. I love efficiency and productivity and charts and graphs, and I can whip out some awesome Google spreadsheets. Right. And, it's a temptation for me not to, I have to work at this is what I'm saying.
Well, and I can say the same thing, and I can measure things in really weird ways. But I'm just saying, there's an inherent human desire to measure in such a way. It's interesting. Is that a human desire from the heart or from the spirit, right? I mean, I don't know. And obviously, there can be an idolatry aspect in that. The point that I'm saying is that I think I understand why people measure economic stuff, because that's the easiest way to keep score. Right, yeah. Right. Life, the fastest set of numbers I can use to convert my quote unquote success is my paycheck, is my annual earning, all the financial things that come off of that, and all the manifestations of that in terms of the car that I drive, the house that I live in, all those kinds of things. First is an interesting question: is that a twist? Are we being tempted into measuring those numbers? But the bigger question is, what's the measurement that we should use instead? Because we're obviously attracted to measurements. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me add to the question before we take a stab at answering it. Because I think we're living in a moment right now where, what's the old Warren Buffett quote, when the tide goes out, you find out who's skinny dipping? So you think of the metrics by which we evaluate that person's successful, and then you start looking at, what percent of high-end sports cars are financed and leased?
Right.
What percentage of houses are underwater on their mortgage that are McMansions? What percentage of and so I just think there's a growing recognition that some of the older metrics don't. The emperor has no clue. It's like, and I don't know if there's a technological age or just we're getting tired of the technological age where we're starting to say, yeah, that doesn't matter. And I would say in my conversations, even like on a more traditional college campus, even, you know, back like 2013, 14, back in there, even at the Ivy League schools, you had a lot of young people who were like, you know what? I would rather have one less zero on my paycheck than my parents and one less beach house and have a better life than what's going on there right now. And so I think there has kind of been this, like, there's, we're kind of in the middle of this 10-year unraveling of saying maybe the awards we're winning are silly awards to silly games at the end of the day.
Well, and I think that's right. And I think Christianity gives us this kind of ability to ask that question. It's a better idea. But I think then if it comes down to, so going back to our original question, or our original question we're thinking about here, that blue collar worker is going, I am in here slaving, making it possible for all these people to do these things, and I can barely pay my bills. In other words, the scorecard that I get, part of my bitterness here is there's a lot of effort and a low return on the score. And then the white collar worker is saying, the scorecard might look well, but I have a deep dissatisfaction with where I am. And that's obviously an overgeneralization, mm-hmm. but I definitely can think of examples in my life of people saying each of those things. And I think, you know, when we look to people, and I held you up an example, Nathan, I can certainly name other people, that they're keeping score a different way. And that might be the practical piece that we're looking for in terms of, you know, on a day-to-day basis, how are we kind of scoring what we're doing so that we can have some sense of our progress?
Mm-hmm. Well, so there's if you haven't seen it before, I would encourage listeners to go look at so there's a poem and then a picture that went, no, actually it's the picture first and then the poem, which way was it? Yeah. Picture first and then the poem called The Man with a Hoe. And so this is a late 1800s. It's sort of a disfigured peasant with a hoe out in the field. You can see the thorns. Obviously, tough manual labor has reconfigured his body. And then a poem comes along written in America years later. And this kind of became the peasant revolt, democratic socialist anthem, which wasn't that successful because they made hundreds of thousands of dollars off this painting. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But anyway, but there was this, I think we do get these moments, Jonathan, where you have this longing of like, but the poem basically says, is this man any better off than an ox? This human is becoming a beast. And we're just turning the crank and we're cranking out the widget and we go and we do. And I think a lot of people feel that way. The modern response has to say, okay, instead of being a beast, we're going to be a machine. And we're going to jump into this disembodied digital theoretical metaphysical category where we're just trading numbers and information. And it feels like the dollars aren't even real. We're just passing it around. And we start talking about memory and processing and storage and human. My kid's got a birthday card the other day of like, come to so-and-so's birthday. He's leveling up. You're like, I get it. It's funny. But when you start using a computer game language to develop a six-year-old becoming a seven-year-old, to me, that misses a mark. And so I'm not a beast, but I'm also not a machine, and I'm not God. I'm a human. And that Psalm 8 kind of ranking from starting with the praise of God, and it starts with the sun and the moon, you know, which you've set in the heavens. Actually, your glory is above, it starts. And then all the way down, you've made him a little lower than the angels. What is man that you're mindful? And then below him, you've put everything under his feet, the beasts of the field and the birds of the air and the fish that swim the depths of the deep. So that Psalm 8 starts above the heavens and ends in the bottom of the ocean and then places humanity right in the middle. And so our theological work is the work that we do when we look up, and our scientific work is the work that we do when we look below us. And understanding that proper balance of where we are in the hierarchy of creation, if a human tries to become more than human, they become a tyrant. And if they try to become less than human, they become bestial in a way that is terrifying and destructive to themselves and the community around them. And so there really is something in this idea of being called to be conformed to the image of the Son, who's the image of the invisible God, and God was pleased to have his soul, that we do have a target to grow toward here. And that oftentimes within our Christian faith, you can have intention, but you can't have strategy. You can will outcomes, but you have to pursue, this is what God is asking of me, and then I'll let the cards fall as they may. And for some people, you're going to make $1 million overnight. And other people, you're going to die in a hut in the Congo. But what I have to do to contribute to this is to say that I want to honor people to the degree that I think they're being obedient to the thing that God is calling them to, and not the other metrics.
Yeah, I would almost contest that just the The concept of just trying to measure kingdom faithfulness by metrics in and of itself is just completely and utterly flawed. And you can think of a multitude of examples throughout history and throughout scripture of people who, by any metric that you tried to put them against, are not particularly significant, but later on, just in the context of history, you can see how God used them to meaningfully mm-hmm. advance the kingdom, and he used that to an incredible degree. And so whenever we here with our very tiny, finite vision of where we are in history and inside of God's infinite plan, try to measure how effective we are being at building the kingdom of God within that framework, I think that just demonstrates a misunderstanding of who is actually responsible for the kingdom building in the first place.
Okay. And to add to that, famous Christians aren't really having a good moment right now, David. I mean, when we just start looking at let's pick on the church here, on ourselves, within the church, and you look at people who have gotten the bestsellers and the books and the money and the ministries and I think we're starting to see some cracks in the saying, you know, this metric can't be the one that we go by.
We just did a podcast episode on this recently talking about moral failures in leadership. But the thing that makes me kind of conclude is that I just think about we just so often try to apply metrics even to kingdom building things. Like, you know, for example, I think about a local church where it's very easy to say, okay, like how much revenue is the church bringing in if you're looking at, you know, worldly economic metrics. And mm-hmm. obviously, I think just about anybody, any church leader would say, no, that's a terrible metric to measure your church's success by. You know, the goal of your church should be much more focused on the discipleship of your members. Yes, and it is really easy to then all of a sudden apply metrics to how well discipled your members are and start to just, you can just do just overanalyze your success metrics to death and just apply things and just so easily lose focus on just where is God calling me to be faithful right now in the place where he has put me. Am I seeing progress in that? Maybe not right now. Maybe I won't actually see that. But as like, I think this just, it's much more of a simple yet not measurable metric that we're looking at of just faithfulness is not really that measurable by any metrics that we like to use.
So as we conclude this, Nathan, I was thinking about when you are practically applying this. So we actually started off mic joking around a little bit and saying, you know, we kind of plan out our days. We have some sections. And then I think you said something comes flying in sideways and you're like, okay, none of that's going to work anymore. That may be a universal human experience, but it's certainly a universal modern human experience, right? You know, we have so many avenues for stuff to come in. How is it that, you know, what is your personal practice in terms of reconciling the work of the day to your understanding of your success? And obviously we just talked about, you know, you can define that by I made this much money or I got this many tasks done. And we know that there's an emptiness to that. It's not necessarily to be discarded, but there's an emptiness to that. For you personally, what kind of evaluation tools do you use to get to the end of the afternoon, the end of the evening and go, that was a good day or what? So,
no, actually, I think it is that kind of the head hit the pillow. There's a weariness that comes from work and a weariness that comes from worry. And those are very different. And so when you put your head on the pillow at the end of the day, you're like, whew, I'm whooped. My wife and I say a prayer together and then you're out. Because good things happen 100% of the time. When that happens, you look back at the day and recognize that you were there, but you were not the sole cause for the good outcomes that happened. And so it starts in the morning with saying, Lord, I'm willing, not my will, but yours be done. Help me set aside selfish ambition. And a couple of simple little prayers. One of like, for me is my wife and I pray, Lord, would you help us steward our blessings well? So you're going to say, with what I have that you have given me today, how can I use them well? Who do you want me to help? Who can encourage me? Where do you want to, like, what do I need to learn? Help me as I learn, as I teach. And so you start with an openness, and then most of the time, if I get into a pinch point, it's because I've massively over overvalued my importance in that situation. And so recontextualizing, whose project is this, is part of that. And then the other thing is that I think as we grow, our salvation is individual. It's personal, but it's not individualistic. And so, hopefully your experience as you mature spiritually is that people form around you who you can, this happened, last night. I got a call for something. Can you come take this person this way? And I was like, you know what? I got somebody. Give them a call. I'd love to do that. Retired person. Be happy to help you out in that way. And so some of it is to have the humility to ask for help. So do what you can when you can. But there's kind of that weird, like, everyone should carry their own burden, but each one should carry, but help each other bear each other's burdens. Pressing into that would be one practical way also, Jonathan, I think, of saying, what is it that God is asking me to do? And then, I can stack square bales by myself, by hand. I can't do that with round bales. What is the size of the task that God has grown me into that I can handle? And when do I need to step back? And the people that I respect the most and who get the most done in the world have a very clear understanding of where that threshold is. One, you get smashed and crushed and nothing done. And the other, you build something neat. So there's that element of it. And then I think the other thing is to recognize that if you kind of feel plateaued, or maybe you're listening to this and you're saying, hey, I'm not really tearing it up. You know, I don't put my head on the pillow at the end of the night. The thing of it is that you grow on the plateau. So you say, where I am is where God wants me to be right now. And then you pray, Lord, would you shape and grow in me the things and the character and the skills that are necessary for the future need that will be in the world that I will be there to meet? And so ask the Lord, and this isn't theoretical. I'm saying literally do this in your prayer of saying, would you shape and form and grow in me things that would be useful to the world? And then, so we get ourselves ready and we let God use us. That's there's a kind of a funny balance there between human freedom and sovereignty and all that. I recognize in all the conversation there for sure. But to be human means that we're physical creatures meant to live in communion with a supremely spiritual being who guides and directs and gives us that grin in our soul and our skip in our step, I think, as we come to the end of our days.
Well, I can't think of a better sort of vision or idea to leave you this with than having a grin in your soul. I think there is part of the reason I think this conversation is so important, and I wanted to have it with you, Nathan, is that there is all kinds of things about what it means to be a Christian, to walk out and live the Christian faith. But the one that day to day is most noticeable as a benefit, I think, that is often understated and unseen, is to be able to live each day with a grin in your soul. And I think that the kind of prayers that you've talked about here, the kind of perspective you've talked about here, and maybe sort of pulling out some of those unseen assumptions and taking a hard critical look at them can open up the doorways and open up the possibility for you to get to a place where living on a daily basis, even an hourly basis, with a grin in your soul is not just a possibility, but in fact, your reality and your experience of everyday life. So thanks. It's always great to have you on. And thanks for your time. And for all the listeners, make sure that you continue to listen to Be Unbound. We'd be happy for you to do that. But check out the Thinking Out Loud podcast with Nathan and go over and see what he's doing, both on his website and certainly subscribe to the podcast and listen to the conversations that he has there. Thanks, Nathan.
Oh, conversations with Nathan are always a treat, and this was definitely no exception. It was really cool to be able to bring him on and to just kick around, really, I think, what is just the core idea of what we try to do with this podcast, which is just to put legs on the Christian faith and try to wrestle with what it actually looks like to live out our faith. And I think the big theme that I heard all throughout what Nathan concluded with there was just humility. And I think that that can't be overstated in the Christian life, of just so much of our measuring and how we try to determine our own success and whether or not we are doing a good job at whatever it is we're doing can just be solved by recognizing that it's not about us. And it's simultaneously a really convicting thing, and it's also, once you're able to get there, a really freeing thing to just recognize that you can let go of so much of what we hang on to and stress out over and just live faithfully. And it can end up, just being such a liberating thing.
Conversation with Nathan can often result in a notebook worth of quotes that I think I need to ponder on and think about.
Oh, yes.
And I probably have a bunch of those, but the one I might leave you with and sort of select and pull out is that there's a rest that comes from work, and there's a rest that comes from, I mean, there's a weariness that comes from work and a weariness that comes from worry. And I certainly heard that, had deep conviction, and that ties directly to your statement, David, which is a weariness that comes from worry probably is prefaced with a lack of humility. And I don't mean that, by that I mean it starts with a assumption that I am the person that can only, I'm the only person that can fix this, or this is fully my responsibility. And that is a lack of humility of saying, actually, all things are God's. I trust him. I think maybe after we stopped recording, Nathan asked a question. He said, you know, think about your family line. What was the last person that starved to death? Mm-hmm. And he said, for most of us, we probably can go back 300 years before that happened. And now all of a sudden that whole admonition from God that, you know, I will provide for you in the various ways he states in scripture, which seems reckless, turns out to be reality. And, you know, holding those things together is a pretty interesting practical takeaway in terms of how you're going to face whatever comes next in your day-to-day day life going forward from here. Well, thank you for coming along with this conversation. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed having it with Nathan. If you're interested in what we do here at Unbound, please check out beunbound.us. And until next time, be unbound.